This is episode 393 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 16th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation since 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, in these changing media times where newspapers are morphing into online portals and TV stations are struggling to keep viewers, Telstra realises its ambitions to become a content provider as well as a telco. The US-based video-on-demand service Netflix is now finding less demand for movies and more demand for other content. Australian telcos have been given 6 weeks to improve customer service standards on complaints handling, advertising and credit management, as the media watchdog prepares to register a revised code governing the industry. So will it finally mean the end of bill shock? And what about unit pricing like in the supermarkets? In a first, Apple Australia allows in-store payments to be billed directly to your iTunes account. And Adam takes a look at geo-blocking, a technique used to prevent internet users outside a specific country access to services within that country, and wonders if the rewards are worth the hassle. There's the latest in gaming, and don't forget the usual odd spot, gadget app and website of the week. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. But first up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra and Optus want 4G spectrum sooner rather than later. Samsung's Galaxy tablet is not as cool as Apple's iPad. Kogan backs down on criticisms of Bing and Yahoo. And Cisco says demand for video is on the rise with no end in sight. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Both Telstra and Optus say the proposed 700 MHz band spectrum auctions can't come fast enough for their 4G network requirements. Senator Conroy's office recently announced that spectrum auctions in the analog television band would take place in April next year, and that this date would maximise product certainty for bidders prior to the auction and provide new licensees with adequate lead time to plan and deploy networks before their licences commence. However, the government believes a reorganisation of services won't be completed until the 31st of December 2014. This is too long for Telstra and Optus, who are trying to persuade the federal government to allow access to 700 MHz as the spectrum becomes available in particular areas. Vodafone's plans to launch 4G are not slated until 2014. The spectrum auctions are estimated to be worth around $4 billion, and the government says a project and implementation manager will work with broadcasters to ensure affected digital television is reorganised as soon as possible. In a bittersweet victory for Samsung, a judge in the United Kingdom has ruled the design for 3 Galaxy tablets running Android don't infringe upon Apple's registered designs because they're not as cool. In summing up, His Honour Judge Colin Burse also said the Samsung Galaxy Tabs do not have the same understated and extreme simplicity which is possessed by the Apple design, and added that consumers aren't likely to get the tablet computers mixed up. In this latest round of patent wars between Apple and manufacturers like Samsung and HTC, Apple said it was disappointed with the decision and that it's no coincidence that Samsung's latest products look a lot like the iPhone and the iPad. Apple was contending that the Galaxy Tabs infringed patents for reasons which included slightly rounded corners, a flat transparent surface without any ornamentation, and a thin profile. The previous week, Apple lost its fight with manufacturer HTC over its slide-to-unlock patent. In that case, the High Court ruled that slide-to-unlock is so obvious, Apple has no right to claim it. Apple has been given 21 days to appeal the Samsung decision. The CEO of discount online electronics retailer Kogan has backed down on claims last week that some search engines had deliberately removed his store from search results because he started charging customers an Internet Explorer tax. Mr. Ruslan Kogan announced last month that his online store would tax visitors who used Microsoft's Internet Explorer 7 web browser because the time and effort spent in maintaining his site for an outdated browser cost him real money. In an interview with Fairfax, Mr. Kogan said 2 days after the IE7 tax was introduced, the online store stopped getting traffic from Bing and Yahoo. Fairfax editors Mr. James Manning and Mr. Ben Grubb noted that Bing and Yahoo's search results listed Kogan's Facebook and Twitter pages, but returned no link to the official website, Kogan.com. But a short time later, Mr. Kogan backed down from his criticism, saying, "I'm sure it's just a bug or something from their end," and added, "I can't see a company like Microsoft choosing to censor search results, because obviously it would affect how people viewed their search engine." Microsoft said that search results were not manually altered and that ranking is done in an automated manner, which can sometimes lead to unexpected results. At the time of compiling this week's Tech Talk news, the Kogan website appeared to be correctly and consistently indexed by both Bing and Yahoo search engines. And network hardware manufacturer and voiceover IP heavyweight Cisco says that increased demand for bandwidth in Australia over the next 4 years will be directly attributable to our insatiable desire for video. Vice President of Global Technology Policy, Dr. Robert Pepper, says that internet usage generally will probably increase sixfold, while mobile data traffic will increase by a factor of 14 in the next 4 years. Dr. Pepper spoke on ABC Radio last week and said that while internet video would not entirely replace free-to-air television, a generational shift meant that more and more young people were consuming video content over the internet.
The fastest growing category, interestingly, is internet video to your television. People like the large form factor. They like the large screen, and so they're connecting their internet device, right, their router, their computer, and they're connecting that to the big flat panel TV.
Dr. Pepper told the ABC's PM program that the construction of a national broadband network would make Australia a world leader in broadband delivery, rivaling countries like Singapore. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam was too busy with Minecraft to do a proper view from the couch.
Be nice or I'll lick you.
Oh, yeah. See, normally, and it is not a femto cell.
No, I think it is actually something different.
It is actually technically different. Yeah.
Yeah, no proxies. No proxies. Indeed.
Because that's all anyone would ever need.
Say.
Says.
Thanks, Dr. Ron. No. Now we've lost a listener.
Even when sick, I'll still dance to my music.
Yeah, no, it's good. So common sense is prevailing here, Graham.
In this one rare case, yes.
The department says there's no privacy risk. So that's comforting.
Oh, that's comforting, isn't it?
Good.
Yeah.
Helpful.
Gutsy. Electronic Arts.
Are going to be going 100% digital.
What does that mean?
It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, "Andrew,
beware of the leopard."
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. On today's program, Dr. Ron.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Bit sniffly, bit of that going around, but hey.
You've all had the dreaded lurgy.
We have.
Mm. I've escaped relatively successfully.
Well, you're in this lovely, intimate environment here in this radio studio. I'm sure between one of the other three of us in the room, we can give you something.
You can share the love.
Lena licked his eyeballs last week.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
It's always humid in here, too. It's like bugs come in here to multiply.
Mm.
Could be right there.
Ugh.
How are you, Lena?
How are you?
You're sounding a lot better than...
Thank you.
Looking very red this evening. Getting very dapper there. In the red tea cosy.
Thank you. I think it looks wonderful. It's a knitted hat.
Is that what it is?
Not a tea cosy.
My wife brought me a knitted hat the other day, and I said, gee, that looks like a tea cosy. I put it on, they laughed, and I said, okay, I'm not putting it on again. So there you go. Graham's in. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Andrew.
Lovely to have you in again this evening, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Yes, be an entertaining and interesting evening. No doubt with all three of us here tonight, today, this week. What else do I have to say? Everything? Got it all covered? Excellent. Yeah. Anyway, it's been an interesting week. I had a bit of a look at the offerings of the Olympics, video-wise, television-wise, very shortly.
To see what would be available.
Because apparently it's only a week or so away now. So, depending on what time you're listening to it. But yes, there's some interesting offerings available. We'll put it this way. It's really... sad to see what we don't have in Australia compared to the rest of the world. But I guess that's just because of the anti-siphoning laws that we have in this country.
Are there apps?
There are apps. There are apps.
Who's got rights? Are we going to talk about this a bit later in more detail?
I think we should.
Yeah, okay.
I think we should.
I'll save all my questions till then. I've got lots of questions.
Have you? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, we had a good chat about on another radio station today, which was good. Got a lot of people talking. It's all good. So, yeah. So if you're that way inclined, and it's not just the Olympics. It could be any broadcast. It could be the soccer, you know, the World Cup or something like that. And just the way that things just don't find their way online in this country like they do in every other country. But anyway, that's more about that later, I guess. So what else has been happening this week, Dr. Ron? Anything that really stands to mind or anything like that?
I thought it was quite a slow news week, to be honest, in the tech world.
Yeah? The news was interesting, to say the least.
There was some interesting stuff in the news, but yeah, it was a bit,
I've
bit of a struggle.
I've got a couple of questions for you about the news, Dr. Ron.
Go ahead, Graham. Uh-oh.
Is that really that guy's name, Dr. Pepper?
Look, I did a lot of research. I did a lot of research, and as far as I can tell, that is his name. Certainly,
does he make soft drink?
No, he doesn't make soft drink. He works for Cisco, and people who work in the IT industry will know that Cisco is a big name internationally as a hardware vendor, maker of network products and voice over IP systems.
Yeah, they're networking people, yeah.
When I grew up, there was a TV program called The Cisco Kid. I wonder if he ever was the founder of routers.
Well, this gentleman's the vice president of global technology policy, according to Cisco's website.
Okay.
Dr. Robert Pepper.
Hey, some news in telephone stuff these days. ACMA's come down with a half-hearted fist to try and sort of bring the telcos into line.
Really?
Yeah, truly.
Now, Andy B in our chat room wanted us to talk about ACMA on this week's program.
I'm trying to log into the chat room at the moment, but Apple keeps saying I've got to update all this software.
Oh.
Hang on, just bear with... Yeah, look... You don't believe me, do you, on my PC? There you go. Look, there's four things it wants to update.
Yeah, that's the Apple updater.
Yeah. See?
No doubt about it.
If what, you're listening... She's looking stunned. She's got that... Apple?
You're trying to make
it has nothing to do
joke.
With the chat room. It's to do
not
with
a
your,
joke. It just popped
your
up.
Netbook.
Yeah, on my little netbook. Yeah. It just popped up and said...
I predict that you only turn that on once a week.
Your predictions are very good, young Skywalker.
That's why you have this problem at the same time every week. If you're listening to us live, come and join us. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. That's where we all are.
That'd be good.
Of course, we did have Patch Tuesday during the course of last week, after last week's show.
Yeah.
So there were lots of updates for all our Windows machines during the last week, and a lot of people would have noticed that... Yeah, there were a couple that seemed to take a bit of effort for the machine to load. I had quite a lot of people say to me that they had slow machines and funny little performance issues just for you know, one day or so during last week, and then they'd do a reboot and everything would be good again.
I had an issue like that. The NVIDIA driver disappeared. I went back to some 640 by... No, it wasn't quite that bad, but really ugly display, so I had to reload my NVIDIA driver again after
that's interesting.
An update, so...
Yeah, I had another customer with a video card problem during the course of last week as well. They said to me that their screens would go off every now and then.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, look, just do a reboot while I have a think about what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a reboot, and the BIOS screen that flashes up from the video card just before everything else happens?
The BIOS. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so the first thing is the video card's BIOS screen flashes up, then the motherboard's BIOS flashes up.
Yeah, all these things
that go past very quickly before Windows starts to load.
Yeah.
Those screens were just random screenfuls of text.
Gobbledygook?
Gobbledygook.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a technical term.
And then when Windows loaded, it overwrote it with correct graphics.
Oh.
But I thought...
That's interesting that it was tinkering at that level.
Well, that was the clue that there was something actually physically wrong with the video card. So I opened up the computer and looked at the video card... And these little capacitors, little components on the circuit board...
Oh, now we're getting techie. Yeah.
Yeah. And two of them had big, domed, bulging tops that were looking like they were about to burst. They were about to...
Oh, really? And did they?
Spew forth their guts, as they do in those...
Okay. Because the number one rule in electronics is never let the smoke out of the components.
Yeah, well, the smoke was definitely pushing really hard to come out of these little capacitors. You could see other ones beside it that were nice and flat tops, and these ones were bulging out and just about to split at the seams.
Whoa. And this was all caused by the Windows updates.
No, this was not caused by the Windows updates. It's a separate issue. Sorry, I should have made that clear.
Just checking.
No. This is just by coincidence that, it is just you know, you don't see those sorts of problems all the time, and it's just
not in today's modern technology, do you?
No, but it was one of those cases where you could physically see the hardware problem on the circuit board, and it was very easy to identify and just swap out the video card and sort out the customer's problem.
Did you put on the face mask and tell everyone to stand clear and go in there with? Stand back, everyone. I'm a professional.
Yeah, I probably should have. The state these machines. You know how dusty these machines in these offices get inside. But yeah, no, I just thought I'd relay that because it's something that you can physically see with, you know, just by examining the circuit board. And yeah,
didn't quite look
people.
Right.
Yeah, if you are having problems like that or with your computer, you can examine the board for those sorts of obvious issues or obviously overheated components and things like that, and you can sometimes diagnose hardware faults just by looking with your eyes.
A visual diagnosis. Yeah. Very good. All right, it's time to go to today's Coro, Dr. Ron.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel. Wei Yin via direct email this week says, hello team. Hi Wei Yin. Really enjoying your show. Keep up the good work. Oh, that's nice. A couple of comments and questions. Can you please clarify the Telstra mobile broadband data plan rollover policy? Where is the reference that says the unused data will be rolled over if we top up prior to the expiry? We were talking about this last week.
Non-believer.
I believe. Yeah,
this was a plan that Andrew specifically mentioned. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, but I understood that what you were saying was it was a particular data plan for a prepaid service.
Prepaid mobile broadband,
there
yes.
There was a very high-end plan. You'd paid for a significant amount of data.
Well, we were talking about it last week because it was the one that Telstra put an extra $30 on and gives an extra 2 gigs. So it went from $150 a year.
Yeah, so this is a big plan. Yeah.
Yeah, 100. Well, it's
well,
not
I know,
really.
$150, but yeah, over a year is not a lot. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. It's not really a big plan. It's more an economical plan if you're...
it's a long-term plan. Yeah,
yeah, if you're like me, which you use a couple of gig on holiday and then you don't use it for a month and then you end up going up the bush to the Rallos and you want to plug in and use broadband up. Yeah, it's one of those sort of non-quite, you don't use it for work, but you want to use it.
For when you're not using a steady amount of data every month, but when you're using it in bursts over the year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, it was a Telstra prepaid plan, and I'll find it online whilst Dr. Ron talks about the next one. But
not all of their plans are like this. It's just that particular plan happened to do this. Is that
it's
right?
It's prepaid only that does this. I think it applies to all of their mobile broadband prepaid, but I will double check that. But I can say that that's what's happened in mine in the past because I've had this plan for some time, which is readily available, still available.
Okay.
And
because when you said you've had it for some time, my immediate thought was perhaps it's a grandfathered plan that isn't available to new customers anymore.
I'm hearing your thoughts, but no, I'm pretty sure it's not. I'll just double check on the website and I'll put links up there. I'll tweet it or I'll do something like that because that's what we can do.
Wei Yin says he's interested in getting the prepaid mobile broadband Wi-Fi hotspot from Telstra. There we go. But the cost has always been an issue. But knowing the credits will roll over to the next period if I top up will make the idea much more attractive.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, Wei Yin. Thanks, Wei Yin.
Yeah, I think the Telstra prepaid hotspot's a pretty good little toy these days with the one they've got now, I believe, is capable of DC HSPA, so it'll make two connections to the third generation Next-G network.
So but two also, concurrent connections.
Yep, so it gets very fast, but it's also capable of doing... as I grab hold of one in the studio that's been kindly passed to me by my executive producer here.
That's not the 4G one. This is the previous model, but the current one
does 4G as well.
Yeah, it's the next flavour up, and it's the same price.
And they're a neat little device, and it looks like it's got a fairly decent, must have a fairly decent battery under there.
Yeah, it does. And it's got two antenna points on it, which means that you can...
Yep.
You can do the what do they call it, Dr. Ron? You know the right term.
Diversity antenna.
That's the one. Which means it gives you a bit more stability and the likes. It's got a big screen on it, so you can actually see who's connected to it at the time, and you can plug into it and change it with your USB port. They're terrific things. Best.
It's even got antenna sockets, so you can plug in an external antenna if you're in need of Better coverage than the internal antennas provide. Oh, look at that. The screen lights up and blue lights come on. It's very exciting.
That's our Travel Mate one. If I travel interstate or we go on a holiday with the kids, that means their iPods can stay connected, the iPad gets plugged in, the netbooks all work.
Yeah, that'd be... what do? You chuck that up on the dashboard and everybody in the car just has access.
Yep, that's right. And
beautiful.
Even the mobile phones can use it, obviously, through Wi-Fi. And it lets you connect 5 devices at one time. Very handy. No more, no less. 5. Well, actually less.
No, what, no less? Oh.
No, you don't have to have 5 things connected. No, that's...
Sorry, I was on the sales pitch there. And I don't have shares in Telstra. But actually, that's a good thing. You've seen their share price lately? Anyway, moving on to other things.
What's happening to the share price?
Oh, it's on the up.
They're
going to become broadcasters.
It's not April 1st.
No, it's not.
Share price only goes down. TLS on the ASX.
Be careful. Be careful what you say, young Skywalker.
Nigel... via the contact form, says, like Andrew, I quite like my iGoogle desktop.
Yes.
On hearing during last week's program that Google were going to discontinue it, I thought I'd find some replacements from Microsoft's Windows 7 gadget gallery. I was shocked, says Nigel, shocked and appalled to find that... No, I didn't say that. I made a bit of that up. To find that the gadget gallery has been closed. It looks like there's a relentless push towards Metro.
It was closed quite some time ago, actually, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
We'd all better get used to it. Cheers, Nigel. What was the gadget gallery, Graham?
It was the place where you could go to get little... doohickeys and whatchamacallits to put on your desktop.
Oh, widgets?
Yeah, okay. Little desktop... Yeah, you know, like that one came with my antivirus.
Oh, little autonomous desktop applications.
Yeah, but my home computer's got a couple of others that I haven't got on this one because they closed the gadget store doohickey thingy.
Okay. Nigel's probably on the money there. We all better start getting used to Metro. That's the way it's all headed. Regular contributor GJ via the contact form.
Hi, GJ.
Says, I was amazed that you guys missed this, though you were sick. And I'm not saying it in a scornful way. Last week, the first ever man-made thing, still working and still monitored, left the solar system.
I tweeted about it.
You did tweet. I saw your tweets.
And I Facebooked about it.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk about it on the show.
We did not, did we?
No. Bad.
That, to use the words of Hitchhikers, is really big. The Voyager spacecraft. So we are delving deep in both directions at the moment. The smallest quantum physics and the very big. Also on the Higgs boson particle, my understanding is they haven't found the particle, just evidence of it, in the bits left after the collision.
With particles like this, you never find the actual particle because they just don't exist for any length of time. Like, they exist for, you know, fractions of microseconds. What you do find is their breakdown products. So you create them in this huge high-energy explosion because they only exist in this high-energy situation. They immediately break down into other things, but you can infer from what they break down into what they were before they broke down.
Thanks, GJ.
That's how it works.
Science.
It is science. It's exciting.
It is. It's extremely exciting. And yes, quite correct about the Voyager spacecraft. There's two of them, and they're both right in the very edge of the solar system at the moment, where the solar winds, the pressure of radiation coming from the sun meets the environment that exists in between star systems, the sort of the galactic sort of background level of particles and radiation, and they're right in the very edge of the bubble, so. And you can literally imagine it like a bubble with this tiny, tiny film of an edge, and that's they're inside the edge, and it's really very exciting what they're learning, because they're discovering that it's not quite working the way that they thought it was.
The heliosphere. Is that where it is? That's what Mod in our chat room says. And he's an astronomy nerd.
Is he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
I might believe it then.
Yeah, I might defer to him for the moment. I had believed that meant something else, but I could be wrong.
Jerry, via the contact form, says, hi.
Jerry Harvey?
No, just Jerry.
Oh.
Oh, it doesn't say. I think it's just Jerry. I was taking the dog for a walk the other day. through the paddocks and like, listening you to
you do that
podcast.
All the time.
I do.
Do you listen to the podcast whilst walking the dog?
I listen to podcasts. I don't usually listen to this podcast. No,
why would you want to?
Indeed.
It's got yourself on it. I don't want to hear my own voice when I can hear other people's voices.
I have enough PTSD just, yeah. doing the post-production that I do. It was nice to hear some...
Yes, by the time you and I finish with the show, Ron, we've heard it all 5,000 times.
We don't want to hear it
between the two of us.
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
It's that bad. Check your Medicare card.
Oh, check that on the way out. It was nice to hear some feedback from another senior listener. I really enjoy your show too. I was wondering if you could discuss the uses of a smartphone compared with a tablet device. Apart from the obvious, I do not have a great need to use a mobile phone, as I'm not a great communicator.
Oh,
I would, Jerry, you've emailed us. You're doing all right, by the
way. Well done, Jerry.
Yeah.
There's more to communication than talking.
There is. There's a lot more.
Especially in this day and age.
Yep. I have an old one that I use when necessary. I'm not on a plan. I just pay in advance.
That makes sense.
But the size of a smartphone compared with a tablet is appealing. I enjoy playing Words with Friends. Ah, anyone here play Words with Friends?
Yes.
Yeah, I've played it before, but
I haven't. What is it?
It's Scrabble, pretty much.
Oh.
Allegedly.
Why don't you call it Scrabble?
On your, because then you have to pay the people who
own that's
Scrabble.
True, don't you? They probably want big
bucks. It's Scrabble-like.
It's Scrabble-esque. And it's, you play against your friends, so you take a turn and then the other person gets a little notification saying you put a word down, so then you put a word down and it's Scrabble, but you don't have to sit there and stare at it the whole time. You can sort of go on with your life and yeah, it's a good game.
I was going to say it was the one where you draw things with coloured crayons, but that's
a draw something.
Yeah. There's also Hanging with Friends, which is Hangman.
Hanging with Friends.
Hanging with Friends.
Yep.
Jerry, check those ones out too. Jerry says, I have to play via Facebook on my computer. I have a wireless setup at home, but tend to do all my internet use on my laptop attached by Ethernet cable to my phone line in a particular room. In fact, I don't know if I move my laptop to another area in the house if the wireless will work. Jerry, there's only one way to find out.
Uh-oh.
I use the wireless connection to download ebooks to my Kindle. Anyway, I'm just trying to work out if a tablet device or smartphone would add anything to my enjoyment of life and what the cost would be for service provision. I currently pay $50 a month for ADSL 2, 20 gigabytes, which I never use, and $29 for my landline. I'm with WestNet. And I probably spend about $5 per month on prepaid mobile phone calls. Thanks for your show. It does help me understand tech things better. Cheers, Jerry.
Thanks for writing, Jerry.
I would very strongly encourage Jerry to go and find a friend or a family member or someone who's got an iPad and just pick it up and do a couple of little basic things with it. See if they've got a card game like Solitaire or something installed and see if they've, get them to show you how they read their emails and that sort of stuff.
Load up Words with Friends and have
basic stuff. Yeah. Well, if you might not want to install something on somebody else's iPad, but just to have a quick look at one to make sure that you're comfortable using it. But my suspicion is that you would love using an iPad or a tablet, probably since it sounds like you're not a... Does he say he's not a particularly tech...
He or she,
yeah. I'm sorry.
Jerry says that not a great communicator, that's
not
all.
Not a great communicator,
Jerry sounds
like
that they're pretty switched on with technology, though. They're using Wi-Fi, they've got an e-book.
You knew what Kindle. An Ethernet cable was, that's a plus.
So
it's more than a lot of people.
Well, look, the iPad's probably the go for simple, easy to use, just works. You're generally going to have less... mucking around than with an Android tablet, like, say, the Galaxy or something like that. Be worth having a good think about that. If you only need to use it at home, if your main use is floating around home, then you don't need to get a separate data plan for the iPad. Just get the... Pardon me. Get the Wi-Fi model. You only need the Wi-Fi plus 3G if you're going to use it outside of home, away from your own wireless.
And you don't have a personal hotspot on your phone.
Yeah. Well, which he probably doesn't because he says it's a basic phone.
Yeah.
That way you won't have to pay any extra for usage charges because you say you're well under your 20 gig plan, so that'll work just fine around your home. What I would do is get someone who... knows what they're doing, whether you've got a tech-savvy family member or the
a 14-year-old.
Local, yeah, or the local computer shop or someone, to make sure that that wireless of yours is secure, that it's got a password on it, and then that it's not using WEP, that it's using WPA for security and all of that sort of stuff. And then connect your connect an iPad to it, and away you go. Now, my 80-something-year-old mother, what is she, 81 this year?
Allegedly.
No, you should know that.
Yes, I should know that. Recently heard about Dr. Ron's experience buying his iPad, and she went down to the Apple store and did the same thing, got herself an iPad.
Oh, goodness.
Did she?
She did.
Oh, dear.
That's great.
Hasn't looked back. She hates using her computer. Her computer is too hard for her to use. She doesn't like using the mouse because the fine motor control just is not her thing. But with the touchscreen on the iPad and the simpleness and ease of use, she finds she can actually achieve tasks. She can play her games. She got the Wi-Fi plus 3G model because one of the things she wanted to do was use Telstra's AFL service while she's out of the house.
Oh, cool. Yep.
And that works great for her. That was one of the key things that she wanted it to do. But for the first time, she's had an email account with Gmail for a few years now that we set up for a while back when we got her a laptop. But she's hardly ever used it. She doesn't read her email. She doesn't send emails. For the first time last weekend, she was away for the weekend, and she sent me an email to say she was having a great time.
Aww.
Did it have the tagline on it, sent from my iPad?
It did, yep.
I got one of those from Dr. Ron just the other day.
You can take that off, though, by the way.
Yeah, these things can be great for people who just want something simple and just works. It's a lot easier to use than your laptop. And I think it's probably going to be a lot of fun. But I would definitely get your hands on one and try it out and just make sure that, you know, with your particular skill set and your particular, affinity with devices just matches up with the way of using an iPad, the way, holding it and touching the screen and all that sort of stuff.
The other thing you said, Jerry, was the size of the smartphone compared with the tablet is appealing. I'm not sure there if you mean you prefer the tablet because it's a bit bigger or you prefer the smartphone because it's a bit smaller.
Well, obviously, the big advantage of the tablet is that the screen is bigger. So if you're watching video or if you're playing a game, you've got a lot more screen area. You can see it clearly, even if your eyesight maybe isn't quite as good.
But if you're quite outwardly mobile, like you say, you're walking the dog through the paddocks and you want something to drop in your pocket, then the smartphone might...
Don't forget, the rumour has it that Apple will be telling us all about very shortly, a half-size iPad, not too distant.
I doubt it.
Do you?
Yep.
I will have a read the Wall Street Journal.
I don't believe a word they say.
iPhone 5's just around the corner too.
Who?
The iPhone 5.
Yes, October.
Around the corner, October.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Maybe.
Allegedly.
All rumour and innuendo because Apple haven't you seen it yet? Confirm anything.
What, the half-sized iPad?
People keep leaking it and showing bits of it online and stuff like that.
I would be genuinely surprised if it was real because I don't think Apple want to segment their market in the App Store any more than they already have.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. But I don't believe in... I don't believe things unless they come from Apple themselves. Because I'm sick of rumours. I'm sick of getting my hopes up. That's what it is. I wanted Retina display on the iPad too.
You've never been the same after that game that you got the other day that's let you down big time, haven't you?
Yeah, no, I've been changed. Burned.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm dead on the inside.
It's the new Lena. Diablo let you down.
Post-Diablo Lena.
Post-Diablo Lena, yeah.
Grr,
it's a different woman.
PBL. Jerry, I hope that's helpful for you. Ray Triple J via the contact form says, hey, Tech Talk Radio team. And I raise in the chat in this week's program. I just want to say thanks to whoever advised that Pandora is now available in Australia.
That would have been Andrew.
Yeah, I'm a Pandora fan.
I am 100% hooked. My week has been filled with creating radio stations, giving thumbs up and thumbs down and spreading the word to everyone I know. Can't wait till the Android app comes out.
It's out. Oh, no, it's not out. But you can download the APK if you're that way inclined.
The APK is the installer
Yes. Okay.
And yes, I will. So what you say is when it's not out, it's not in the Google Play Store just yet.
The app's been out for many, many moons because Pandora obviously has been available in the United States for many moons. And it just hasn't found its way through to the Australian App Store. Like you can see it there. It comes up if you put it through Play on Google's website. It says it's not available in your country. They just haven't changed the flag on it yet.
Is it possible to go to a Tech Talk Radio website?
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Ray, read between the lines.
Yeah, read between the line there, Ray, if you want it.
And yes, I will be signing up for the membership when it becomes available. Like you guys have said before, make the content available at a reasonable price and people will buy it. Keep up the awesome work on the show. Cheers, Ray Triple J. Thanks, Ray.
The best thing I like about Pandora is the American car ads that they stick in every 5 seconds, because I'm tight. I don't pay
for it. All right. That's a legitimate
users probably won't get the same ads, Andrew.
No. Odd, you think?
Yeah.
Whoops.
I reckon the ads are probably regional.
No, but I used to get that with
You've given your unblock us secret away many times on the radio before.
I have, haven't I? But this is a VPN thing I've been using on the Droid.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yes, the American car ads are great. I love them. San Francisco City Toyota or whatever it is. I'm going to buy from them.
Shout out, guys. Do us a deal. Next time we need to buy a car.
Next time we're in San Fran.
Last but certainly not least, Matt via the contact form says, for Melbourne listeners tuning in live, they might be able to get in on this deal, if you mention it, of course. Free access to Acme's Game Masters exhibition.
Woohoo!
Tomorrow in Melbourne. So for those of you listening live, that's today's Monday and this is for Tuesday. You have to be a subscriber to the Herald Sun, says Matt, and there are details at ausbargain.com.au.
Ah, they're rallying the troops for the paywall,
yeah,
are they?
Yeah, so if you're interested in going to have a look at Game Masters at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image. Lena, you've been to Game Masters, haven't
you? I have.
Worth a look?
Definitely.
At the right price, by the sounds of it, if you're a Herald Sun subscriber.
Are they saying that it's tickets for tomorrow night?
They're saying it's just for access tomorrow, all day, I think.
Access tomorrow, okay.
Yeah,
because tomorrow night is the first of the replay evenings that's happening through on Tuesdays throughout the Game Masters thing, or maybe one Tuesday a month through the exhibition. And I think they're talking about film to game adaptations tomorrow, or video game adaptations. So there's like a talk on as well tomorrow night. So I don't know whether it's a ticket to that or a ticket to the actual exhibition or both.
Ah, because they do little lectures and talks and things like that, don't they?
They do. They did at the forum, Acme. And then we'll be doing the replay one. I'll be on one of the panels at one of the replay ones.
You're going back
up
for more?
I am.
Must have been fun the first time round.
It was.
Oh, good.
The link says free entry to Melbourne Acme's Game Masters exhibition tomorrow only, 17th of July.
It must be the actual exhibition. Still good.
Still very good.
But you should hang around and go to the thing at night as well.
And you should go anyway.
Yeah.
Just pay. It's only a couple of bucks.
It's $22 for full and $17.50 for concession, I think.
It is.
Something like
that. Spot on, all off the top of your head. I'm impressed.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely worth going. And all the arcades and everything when you get in there are free. Don't worry about bringing a whole bunch of 20-cent coins with you.
Didn't you say that last week? Some woman in the queue behind you said, how much she wanted to charge.
She thought it was a bit of a scam. That it was cheap to get in, but then when you get in there, you've got to pay to play the games. No, you don't.
You don't need pockets bulging with 20-cent pieces.
No, you don't. There's 125 games to play there.
Gee, it's been a while since you've played a video game in an arcade, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, they're
it
goldies is now, and the little ones, and multiple of them.
Yep. But yeah, definitely go and have a look. It's fantastic. It's the largest video games exhibition ever seen in the world, and it's in
it's
Melbourne.
It's here.
Yep. So that's
in
really,
Australia.
Really cool. Really cool.
That's all our correspondence for this week, Andrew. If you want to communicate with the panel, you can. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
And before I go, I have been looking for the Telstra thing. I cannot find it stated on their new website, but I can tell you from experience that when you recharge, it rolls over the balance. Try it. Trust me. I'll probably live to regret that, but anyway, there you go. Yes, Tech Talk Radio, back with more after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron, what should we talk about now? Mobile phones and ACMA, or television, Channel 9 and the Olympics?
Andy B in our chat room wants us to talk about mobile phones and ACMA.
Oh, okay. Well, during the course of the week, last week, in fact, ACMA released a new way of, what do you call those? What's the word? It's a guideline. Well, it's not really a guideline. It's legislation, isn't it?
Or is it? Is it a code of practice?
Code of practice. That's probably more the point, isn't it? And a lot of these things that they've put in the code of practice will become very much enforceable as much as ACMA can go. Now,
let's see what it actually is.
Let's see. Apparently, there's been some wins for the consumer, and you can see these wins. ACMA have a PDF, which if you go to the very front of the Tech Talk Radio website right now, there's the rotating news banners at the top.
Yep.
You will see an ACMA one there that says reconnecting the customer. Click on that, and you'll see the PDF, which we're going to currently refer to. And basically, it's got the top 10 customer wins. The ACMA has agreed to register the new telecommunications consumer product code with significant wins that help consumers make informed choices about their telco and internet services. Because a lot of people, let's face it, the bill shock's been a bit of a killer. You've been away overseas or even just, you know, travelling the countryside and you've been using all the data and stuff like that up.
But the issue is that it's always been confusing. The way that the pricing has been structured with plans, it's always been confusing.
Yes.
So you'll get, you know, like $49.95 a month gives you this amount of data and this number of arbitrary minutes of calls, and it makes it very difficult to compare the plans.
That's right. They're looking at introducing supermarket-style pricing, which has created all sorts of issues for the telcos.
Which means 2 litre of milk, whatever, $1.75.
Yeah, it's like when you go and buy your chocolate bullets at the supermarket, it says it's 3 cents a bullet.
Yep.
So you know exactly how much you're paying for what you get.
It probably says per 100 gram or something like
that.
So you compare one against the other.
Anyway, so they're going to address...
In the US, this is absolutely commonplace. Every mobile plan, everybody knows that they talk about minutes. And,
yes.
Yep, you get so many minutes for so many dollars.
Mm.
And you know, and when people are wondering if their phone's going to run out of their plan, they say, oh, I've only got a few minutes left. I'll save it for an important call.
Correct. Anyway, the ACMA held a public inquiry, which I think we spoke about on the show a while back, and the final report was released in September of 2011, found that the telecommunications companies write off up to $113 million annually in bad debts related to bill shock. Now, did that surprise you? Because I reckon a lot of people go, you're kidding me, I'm not paying that.
It's $113 million. It surprised me in that I thought it was low.
Yeah.
I thought they would write off a lot more than that. But it didn't surprise me.
Maybe they're recouping quite a bit then.
Well, it didn't surprise me that it was written off because they know that they haven't got a leg to stand on in terms of, you know, if pushing it. Like, if it was actually contested and it became legal and nasty, then, you know, they wouldn't have a leg to stand on most of the time because the terms and conditions are so convoluted.
Yeah.
People don't read them. They're not in plain English. It's, you know, it's not, they can't be, they're not enforceable.
Yep. Now, the issue that's still grey is this area of international roaming charges, why we're charged exorbitant rates just to go and communicate in another country. And if you look at Australia, where we are, New Zealand is probably our nearest foreign country, if you want to call them that. But yet, they're closer to us here in the East Coast than what the Western Australians are in Perth. Mm. Yet the telephone rates over there, the roaming charges in New Zealand are amongst the highest I think Australians pay anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these sort of things need to be addressed. One of the other major issues which the Australian Communications and Media Authority are actually trying to push is real-time data usage alerts. So when you get close to, you know, 50%, 80%, I think it was, and 85% of your allocated data allowance, you would be notified in real time that, hey, buddy, slow up, get off, stop watching YouTube or whatever it is.
Well, you get some sort of notification to say that that's where you're at.
Now, the downside of this is that ACMA have only sort of pushed the boundaries to, I think, about 48 hours notification. So you can find out within 2 days of whether you've exceeded your limit or you've got close to those particular arbitrary limits. But ACAN, which is the Australian Communications and Consumer Action Network, they're the guys behind the real-time push, which I think is only fair. If you really want to be true to your customers, you've got to tell them in real time. And there's no reason why telcos can't do it, is there? Does anyone know any reason why they couldn't give you a real-time? There might be a reason.
Real-time alerts or notifications. No, they could introduce
a system.
No reason
whatsoever.
No, technically to do that. It's just extra stuff they've got to do, and they don't want to do it because it's, A, it's going to cost some money to set up, and B, they're making money by people tipping over their limits.
All right, well, here's the deal. Under the accepted code, telcos will be legally required to alert users when they reach 50%, 85% and 100% of their set data allowance on all mobile and fixed line broadband plans from September. Next year. Not this year, next year.
Right. So they've got more than a year to implement this?
Yeah. Users will also receive information about excess charges on reaching 100% of their data allowance. So if you go over, they're going to tell you how much it's going to cost. And that's big bickies, isn't it? That's where they make their money, a lot of these telcos. Getting back to our top 10 customer wins, Here's just a few. You can go and check this out, as I said, on the Tech Talk Radio website, or just Google it. I'm sure you'll find it. What's new? This is the number one win, according to the list. Unit pricing, charging information in text advertising. So what this is going to do is going to empower the consumer to shop around. Standard charging information to be included in all text-based advertisements for included value plans. Now, I don't know whether that comes down to what you were saying there before, Graham, on a per-minute basis, but one can only assume, can't we?
Because we haven't seen it yet. I'm sorry, I just wasn't paying attention there for a moment. I was reading something else that I'm going to mention after that.
You wilfing, were you? Okay, just the unit pricing charging.
Oh, yes.
In advertisements now, standard charging information to be included in all text-based advertisements for included value plans. So I'm assuming it's going to be on a per-minute basis.
They have to provide... Well, I think they said that for plans that they have, where they advertise a thing like you pay $30 and you get $400,000 worth of value, they have to say under that scheme what the undiscounted cost of a two-minute phone call is and the undiscounted cost of sending a SMS to a normal mobile phone.
Yep.
And those sorts of things. The undiscounted cost of downloading a megabyte of data so that they can compare plans to plans and then look at what the discount is.
Yeah. All right, I'll rattle through these at breakneck speed. So once again, follow along online if you want to. Critical information summary detailing volumetric and other key information about telco products, which means you'll be able to better understand what you've actually signed up for.
Yep. That's right. So regardless of what the T's and C's are that you've supposedly read and understood and then signed, they're going to give you extra information as well.
16 pages in the back of the document.
To explain what the T's and C's actually mean. Yeah, okay, good.
Notification about your current spend on mobile call texts and data usage, so there's no excuse for bill shock. Other things that are new, claims about broadband speed need to be substantiated. Industry claims about broadband speeds have to be realistic. So there's no good saying, yeah, we can give you 42 megabits, but... in real world, it's probably more like four.
Yep.
Confusing advertisement terms, banned. And this word is included in that ban, the word cap.
Yes. Now, that's the one I was looking at when I was wilfing a moment ago.
Because, Graham, a cap means this is how much you'll pay, there's no more to pay.
Well, not at the moment it doesn't.
Correct.
But under this code of practice, they talk about a cap must be a hard cap. And a hard cap, and I'm quoting directly here, means a maximum amount applied to a customer's use of telecommunication services which cannot be exceeded. Now, the way that Telstra and many other companies sell cap plans at the moment, the cap is the minimum that you're charged, not the maximum.
Yep.
Whereas they're saying now that the cap must be a hard cap. Let me find... in advertising, a supplier must not engage in the following practices to enable this outcome, and under the list of things is cap. The use of the term cap to advertise any new offers launched after the date of... unless the offer contains a hard cap. So you can only use cap to describe something that actually has a limit that cannot be exceeded.
About time to,
I agree.
Mm. All right, another interesting thing, which is what's new and for customer wins, information about charging, whether you're here or overseas, will be readily available. Access to information about your call and data usage, both current and historical, will also be readily available. They're going to change the industry complaint resolution procedures. They're going to overhaul those because, surprise, surprise, the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, has never seen complaints to the levels which they currently are. And a majority of the complaints are about the bill shock, which is why I think ACMA have actually decided to act. One here, which is intriguing, provision of a unique reference number for each complaint. Obviously, telcos have been bundling their complaints and putting one job number on them. And obviously, it's been watering down complaints or something like that. So they're just...
Oh, and I'm sure they do the thing of, we don't have any record of that particular complaint being made or...
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's just a few to go through.
Lost the file.
Yeah, exactly. Here's an interesting concept too. I saw during the course of the week a comparison between Australian telcos, I'll name names because it was Telstra because that was in the report, and Verizon, which is the US equivalent base. They're offering plans over there in the United States where you can actually, let's say you had a family plan, you can bundle your calls and you can bundle your data so you can have four phones using sharing the love across your plan, which means you could buy a... let's say, for example, here you would buy a plan which might have 2 gigabytes of data each month. So Ron, you get 2, Lena, you get 2, Graham, you get 2. Ron, you go over yours, but Lena's got tons to spare. Do you think we can share in this country? No, you can't do that. Do you think you can do that in the United States? Yes, you can.
Yeah, I'd get penalised here for going over.
Yeah, that's their cash cow. That's their cash cow.
Yeah, now Telstra used to have some plans that did that.
Did they?
They were called group plans.
They do with business, but...
Yeah, and they still do with business, that's right.
Yeah, but not on a personal level where you could do a family
plan. No, they
took
them away from the... You have to have an ABN to get them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, everyone go register an ABN. Yep, I don't think they do with data, do they? Or you have to go on a special, even more special
data plans need ABNs as well, but you can just make up a number.
Oh, really? Shh, don't tell anyone.
They don't check it.
All right. Okay, so there you go. There you go. There's also going to be tighter enforcing of advertising rules.
Yeah, the advertising rules are great.
I think nearly every telco has been hauled across the coal at one point in time for misleading, haven't they? So
must not use the term unlimited or an equivalent term in an unqualified manner when referring to usage unless the ordinary use of the service in Australia is genuinely unlimited and not subject to exclusions, including exclusions for various type of calls or usage or selected parts of the network.
Here you go. The unit pricing is going to be based in 2 minutes. So your time call, how much it's going to cost for a 2-minute phone call.
That's right, yeah.
Which will obviously include everything like flag fall and connection fees and disconnection, all those fees that they like to sneak in.
And the same thing for a standard SMS to a national mobile number, and the same thing for a standard download of a megabyte of data.
It's about time, but do you think this is...
long past, Andrew.
Do you think this is going to actually work this time, Graham?
Well... it's only a code. It's not.
Well, there's some legally enforceable stuff that they were talking about, so we'll see, huh?
It's an industry code.
We've got till September next year for them to start playing games, ball properly, doing all that sort of stuff. Dr. Ron?
Yeah, as Graham says, it's a code of conduct. ACMA's always been a bit of a toothless tiger when it comes to these sorts of things, and if a breach of a code or even if a breach of legislation is detected and an action's taken against a carrior, they often just get...
They get pinged $2 million bucks and that's it.
Yeah,
that's about the maximum fine, isn't it?
The wet tram ticket, as Graham said.
I think we've discussed that previously, yeah.
Mm.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That's our telephone bit for this evening. If you'd like to join us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We're going to take a break now when we come back. We're going to talk about television. Adam has things to say about television. I have things to say about television. We all love it and loathe it. But there's this thing called the Olympics coming up very shortly.
Not allowed to say Olympics.
Why not?
Not allowed to say Summer, Olympics, London, or 2012.
How come?
You just said all of those
in
things.
In London while the Olympics are on.
Why?
I don't know. Because they're being crazy.
Who said?
Crazy. Some broadcaster said they weren't allowed to say it.
Doesn't apply here, does it?
No.
Because we're going to.
What are they
going to
do? They're busy having sports day.
They might take our birthdays away.
Yeah.
Take to us with a wet tram ticket, apparently.
Mm.
All right, back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just a couple of things we probably could talk about before we tend to forget them as we do from time to time.
We had a minor correction to make.
We do.
Apropos our previous segment.
Yes, it is this September that the new stuff comes into play for telcos. They've been given 6 weeks to improve their customer
service. The new code, yeah.
Get their code all happen with their complaints management and stuff like that. Yeah, after 2 years of negotiation there. So there you go.
So that's quite fast.
It is.
It takes Telstra like 8 weeks to form a committee.
Well, yeah, when you think about current political issues and stuff like that. Yeah.
A lot of work to do in a short space of time.
From the Wall Street Journal, just apropos of what we were talking about with Liam's before, and she was going, no, I don't like the sound of this. The company, being Apple, is developing a new tablet with a 7.85-inch screen that is likely to sell for significantly less than the latest $499 iPad with its 9.7-inch display. Now, this is...
Steve wouldn't like this.
No.
Steve would not like this.
So, this was in the Wall Street Journal.
I'm not sure what the point is. Why do you want a smaller
That's
one?
That's why Steve wouldn't like this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's on the back of Google's announcement with the Nexus 7 and all that sort of stuff. And then
Apple don't copy Kindles.
No, they don't copy. But it's the marketplace.
They're not
that...
normally a Me Too sort of a company. No,
they don't copy. They don't need to.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't... I trust the Wall Street Journal and all that, but I just don't like rumour and scuttlebutt.
Where's the Wall Street Journal getting it from? Do they say what their source is?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't read.
Because journalists are pretty bored right now.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah. So, you know.
As you can tell by my next story that I'm about to talk about.
Ooh.
Tasmanian police are not there to censor the internet, apparently. I had a laugh when this came through. Tasmania's police force has taken the unusual step of asking the police to stop alerting it to every abusive or harassing comment posted on Facebook or other social media networks.
Oh.
The force said it was increasingly receiving complaints about material posted on the site. However, it sought to clarify that the use of technology to undertake some conduct does not in itself create an offence. So you can use it, you can harass people, but that's not not in Tasmania anyway. So the Tassie police, don't go to them with issues about Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that.
Harden up is what they're saying.
Yeah.
That would seem to be a bit backwards to me. I would have thought that harassment or something like that would be illegal in any other form would be just as illegal on Facebook.
Mm.
More than likely.
Maybe they're in the old-fashioned turn off the computer camp.
Yeah.
Because... It's not that easy these days, guys. You've got your phone, your computer, your iPad.
I think the Tasmanian government needs to have a look at the laws, and the Tasmanian police need to have a look at the laws, and have a good hard think about things.
The sacking police in Tasmania, weren't they?
Were they?
That could be why.
I'll find where I saw that somewhere, but it just struck me as being absolutely
extraordinary.
Remarkable. Like, what is the government doing there? How can you? Like, it's like saying, oh, we're just going to, sack some ambulance officers because we've got too many. Mm. What? How can you have... Anyway.
Doesn't work, does it?
Oh, dear.
I don't work in government. I'm sure they know what they're doing.
All right, let's turn our attention to television because we all watch it. Come on, own up, all three of you.
Well, not technically.
I watch a physical television. I don't watch free-to-air or free-to-air programming.
I do watch free-to-air, but it's recorded by the TiVo, so I don't watch it when it's being broadcast.
So you're one of these, delayed thing.
Yes, I like to watch it when you want. Yep.
How you want and with whom you want.
Exactly.
With the dog.
I don't always get to choose with who.
Don't you?
No, sometimes I want to watch things by myself.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
But mums don't get to do that.
Telstra is obviously reshaping its business plan, business strategies. And one of the things that has happened in the last little week, a chap by the name of Rick Ellis, do you know who he is? He works for Telstra.
Does he? What's he do?
He's the Telstra Managing Director of Digital Media.
Of Digital Media?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
what does that mean?
It means media, as in television and stuff that they choose that you might want to watch or see through Big Pond and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, Rick's halfway through restructuring the telco's media arm, introducing a new media management team and overhauling census and doing all that sort of stuff, getting rid of print, going very much online, which is what they were wanting to do in the first place. But here's the catch. He came out and said that we, being Telstra, are changing the digital media model from a telco model, which is largely one where content and investment is justified on the basis of the pull-through benefits of market share shift. That's big speak, isn't it, for media people?
It's waffle.
It is waffle. Anyway, the bottom line is, he says, we're changing to a media company approach, and we are focused on viewers, users, and audiences.
Yeah, that's fine. And if you're going to do that, Telstra, then get out of the telecommunications business and be a media company.
No, they don't want to do that. They want that cake and they want to eat it
get
too.
Get out of the media business and be a telecommunications company.
Yeah. Listen up, Rick. Graham's just giving you a piece of advice.
Yeah, listen up, ACMA. Don't let these monsters get for too any more vertically integrated than they already are, way too much.
Yeah, well, the chances are we'll see what happens around February with all that sort of stuff if they choose to buy telco companies. I'm sure that
if the government and the regulators in this country allow this trend of massive vertical integration to continue, then it will be to the detriment of Australia and to the detriment of all Australian users.
Now, while we're speaking of that, let's talk about the Olympics, shall we? As we all know, I'm going to use words which Lena told me not to. The Summer 2011 Games is happening in the UK. Yep. Kicks off in a little over a week. And the BBC is the host broadcaster this year. And they, as per normal, will do a sterling job and a technically excellent job in covering the games of the what Olympiad are we up to now?
I assume 30th, I think.
30th. Oh, lots of X's. Oh, could be an interesting arrangement of X's. So, that's all to come this year.
So my assumption would be if it's the BBC, then there'll be a partnership with the ABC in Australia and we'll be able to watch everything here.
No.
I wouldn't count on that.
No.
What?
For free? You wish.
We have anti-siphoning laws here in Australia and Channel 9 have the rights to run the free-to-air components. So we're at the whim and call of Channel 9, what they choose to run of the Olympics this year. So they have the free-to-air rights. Foxtel have the pay TV rights, which is, well, it's not free, is it? You have to buy or subscribe to see the stuff that's on Foxtel. Here's the deal. The BBC are running 24 high-definition streams, which the broadcasters
Whoa.
Can pick up.
Cool.
They are also running one 4K stream.
Oh. 4K, that's super-duper high-def.
Is that
for
big screens like Fed Square and that kind of thing?
That's for people that have 4K monitors. Oh. Haven't you got yours yet?
Well, the target market for that, I would assume, would be cinemas.
Correct.
That will run events live on a cinema screen.
Mm.
Now, most cinemas, when they're showing an average film in digital, are going to be showing a 2K picture, which is roughly equivalent to the detail that you get on your high-definition television, about
That's
your
right.
1080p TV.
Yep.
Now, 4K is about equivalent to the old... And it's about equivalent to a 35mm film print. Now, the 4K is about equivalent to a 70mm film print.
4,000 pixels by 4,000 pixels.
And if anyone's Bigger. Ever seen true 70mm film, they know that there is a big difference in quality. So if they can get it to a cinema screen near you in its full glory, it should look really good.
The Astor Theatre had a 4K thing of the Sound of Music. The Astor Theatre did 4K of The Sound of Music,
yes,
and one of the children from Sound of Music was there watching it.
Fantastic, yes. The Astor have a...
The man who played Friedrich.
Have a really, really nice 4K projector, but they also have a really, really nice 70mm film projector, so they can do both worlds.
And they have a cat.
Do they?
A cinema cat.
Marzipan.
Really? It just meanders around the theatre, doesn't it?
Yeah, she snuggles up on your lap when you're watching a movie. And
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. Hmm. She's on Facebook. She has a Facebook page.
Oh, really?
Yep, and that's how I knew about the Sound of Music at the Astor, because she sat next to the guy who played Friedrich, one of the children. Mm. She chose
well. It's quite an honour to be sat next to by
It is, by Marzipan.
Astor cat.
All right, on top of that,
Sorry,
the BBC is also running a 3D channel. So you can actually watch the opening ceremony in three dimensions, if that is your fancy.
Okay.
So if you've lashed out and bought one of these television television sets, which do 3D with the glasses, you can sit back and watch part of the Olympics.
Only if one of the broadcasters here decides to broadcast that 3D stream.
Channel 9 will be doing that.
In 3D.
A new test license has been granted by the Australian Communications and Media Authority for the duration of the games.
I'll have to go out and buy new batteries for my glasses.
Where Channel 9 will have access to the 3D channel.
Now, have access to doesn't necessarily mean they're actually going to make use of it.
Well, they are. They're only going to make use of it for 5 hours in the day, between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. during the daytime.
11 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Yeah, in the afternoon, across lunchtime, you can watch live 3D stuff from the games. Do you know why they're not?
Well, I'm supposed to be working.
Yes. Do you know why they're not running 3D stuff?
Cold coming on. Sorry, what?
Do you know why they're not running 3D content between or outside of those hours while the games are in full flight?
No idea.
Because it's a fad and it's stupid.
No.
Oh. Sorry.
No, it's purely a money-making decision, and that is that the 3D channel is not part of the Oztam ratings.
Mm.
So okay, so because that would...
It would draw viewers away from their main ratings channel. Figures. On well, see, they're actually running.
That is so stupid.
Yes, welcome to Australian television. They're actually running on Channel 9, the normal standard def. They'll be the main feed. They will be running high definition on their Gem channel as a simulcast. Whether it stays as a simulcast,
now do the or people who watch in high def on Gem do they not count in their ratings either?
I think Gem is a surveyed channel.
Okay.
Yeah, all these other non-digital channels are now part of the ratings.
Okay.
But the 3D one doesn't. So, too bad. You bought your 3D TV. That's the end of it. You only get 5 hours a day, and that's it. They'll probably put the Harvey Norman loop up again.
Right.
So that's the free-to-air component in Australia. So, we've taken 24 HD live streams, which are available... That the BBC are putting on. They're using BBC One, BBC yep. Two, BBC Three. They have PC
and
apps.
We're going to cram it full of 35 minutes of ads every hour.
As you do.
Yep.
Anyway, they've also, the BBC have provided to the citizens of the UK iPad apps, iPhone apps, Android apps, apps for your PC, apps for your Mac. So wherever you are in the UK, at whatever device you are using, you can watch the Olympic Games. Brilliance. Absolutely. Using technology to its thing. They've even got a fantastic app, which is available right now if you go to the App Store, both of Android and iPhone. You can download the BBC app. The difference between the app in Australia or outside of the UK and the internal UK app is the UK app supports all the streaming to your device, whereas outside the UK, there's no streaming support.
Yeah, it's an obvious question. Is it going to be geo-blocked in some way? And that's how.
I'll let you know. Well, I don't know. They haven't put it in the app. But if you search around, there are APKs which actually of the internal app which will do it. So if you're using a service like Unblock Us, chances are you'll be able to have that sort of stuff streamed to your device anyway.
Mm.
And this is what we're leading to. So
what's on the ABC? So the main content, not the ABC. What was the other network you said?
Foxtel.
Sorry, what's going to be
Foxtel? Foxtel have taken the 8 channels which I think the BBC are generating as their other main channels, and
yep.
I've got those listed here somewhere. I'll just check my notes here.
So mm-hmm. What's on free to air?
Whatever Channel 9 choose to put to air in their
which is pretty much what it's always been, right?
They're promising 14 and a half hours of live coverage on its primary analog channel and the digital channel, starting at 6:30 every night. And it'll go through to around about 9 a.m. the next morning. So,
oh, nothing during the day. Because I remember the Olympics being on when I was in primary school, 1996.
Yeah. Well, it's in the UK.
It would have been Atlanta, I think, in 96.
Yeah, that's a very different time zone.
They showed... Of course.
Yeah.
So they brought in tellies to all the classrooms and we had the Olympics going on constantly behind the teacher, which was great for
was
productivity.
In fact, Atlanta.
It was? Oh, good.
Well, don't forget, midnight our time is 10 a.m. in the morning in the UK.
Mm.
So all the action happens in the wee small hours of the morning for us.
It does.
So by the time you get up in the next day, it's probably all over Red Rover.
They can TiVo it.
You can. It's not quite the same sport on delay,
no.
is it?
No, it's not. Especially when there's spoilers everywhere.
Just back to the 3D channel too. You'll probably, if you've got a digital TV with 3D, you'll probably have to do a bit of a rescan because there's no assurance from ACMA that it's going to be on the same channel that the last batch was, if you've still got that from when I think the footy was on in 3D as well.
So. Oh, they're doing their test broadcast.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same, another test. So they've obviously...
Now, that's actually a good general tip for digital television owners. To rescan your channels, your digital channels, every now and then for on your PVR and on your set-top boxes or on your digital-capable television, to do a rescan every now and then just to pick up the changes in the channels that the networks do from time to time.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about pay TV. Foxtel in Australia.
Foxtel are going to have 6 channels or something?
Yep. If you're a Foxtel subscriber right now, which I am not, from my understanding, you have 8 channels to choose from. These include London 1 to 8, which is swimming, diving, synchronized swimming and water polo on Channel 1, cycling on Channel 2, gymnastics on Channel 3, athletics on 4, that's the track athletics, field athletics on 5, equestrian on 6, rowing and canoeing and those sort of things on 7, and you head to the beach for beach volleyball, sailing, football, hockey and weightlifting on Channel 8. So they're the offerings, which if you're a HD subscriber, you'll get them in HD and the likes. And if you have those other devices which you can plug your Foxtel account into, I think there's an iPad app and things like that for Foxtel, you'll be able to use it on those devices if you have the said appropriate membership with Foxtel. If you don't have that, There's no sort of proper way that you can watch any of the Olympic stuff on your PC, on your Mac, on your mobile gadget, wherever you might happen to be during the course of the times. A stark contrast to that of the rest of the world. If you want to have a look in the US, the CBS network in the US are doing the same thing. They're running the same eight channels, and those eight channels are ported live to the internet as well, so that those in the United States will be able to watch them anywhere that you might so happen to be. But you know, our Nine network, unfortunately, they don't have that, that sort of smarts in their back end. So what you see on Channel 9 is all you'll be able to get. And what you see on Foxtel, you will get a bit further on your iGadgety type sort of things. But compared to the rest of the world, we're running right down there in the not connected sort of category, I would be saying. So does that surprise anybody?
If the Channel 9 3D stream isn't part of the ratings, how are they going to assess the popularity of the 3D?
Well, it's just a test, isn't it? Yeah, it worked. That's all they need to know, isn't it?
I don't know.
Don't they want to know how much it worked?
Yeah.
Probably not, because I don't think they have any interest in 3D,
is
do they?
Is it binary, is it?
Well, what are they putting
worked,
it in the air
didn't
then?
Work.
That's, yeah, that's right. Hmm. That worked, that didn't work. That's a bit odd. It's a bit strange.
You'd think they'd have some analytics going
well,
on.
Well, you'd hope, because if I was the, you know, the programming, you know, director at Nine, I'd be wanting to gauge what the popularity was of the 3D. If you had, you know,
they may have some way
truckloads of maybe, because the way they do the ratings, they rely on a special group of people, and not X thousand people, to have special hardware installed in their homes, don't they?
Yeah,
and that monitors what is being watched on what channel at what times and for how long, and it relies on people to enter a number of people who are actually viewing it. So they say, oh yeah, there's one person watching telly at the moment or three people watching TV, and that's how they get the ratings.
Yep.
But if it's not a ratingable channel, what's the correct word? It's not a channel that's where they're interested in ratings. How are they going to assess the popularity of the service? That seems very strange
to
me.
No, they aren't, are they?
Well, no.
If you've got one of these smart TVs, the apps in there, you might have a Foxtel app too, like the Samsung tellies and the likes. You'll be able to watch internet-supplied content that way as well. But that's basically it.
Mm.
So there you go. That's the long and short of the Olympic coverage in this country. Remember the previous Olympics? Channel 7 and SBS did a really good tag team job.
Mm.
They did some great stuff. And Nine aren't sharing the love.
I've just noticed the app, I don't know whether you mentioned this before, the Android version of the app only works on Android version 4 and higher.
Really?
Ice cream sandwich.
Yep.
This is the yellow one, the little icon, yellow BBC icon. Did you download it, Dr.
This is the Foxtel.
No. The Foxtel. The Foxtel one.
App.
Oh, okay. I don't have Foxtel, so I have no need.
I've just gone to the page. Download now, choose your device, and the two choices are Apple iPad or Android tablet bracket V4 and higher only, which will exclude most Android tablet users.
Well, there's a lot of that going around at the moment. The Commonwealth Bank released software, which is not applicable with a lot of early Android devices, which in our two-year contracts we're all still currently living with.
Well, a lot of existing Android devices.
Yeah, well, yep. Exactly right. Exactly right. All right, that leads us on to our view from the couch this week. Adam Turner talks a little bit about looking at things further afield than within our own barriers and Netflix and the like. So here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
US-only content providers continue their cat-and-mouse games with those who want to bypass geo-blocking, but I'm wondering if it's a war that can ever really be won. Access to this kind of online content is considered the holy grail for a lot of tech-savvy Australians. They want to tap into services like Netflix and Hulu. The truth is that they're not really that hard to reach from Australia if you know what to do. To be fair, local offerings from the likes of QuickFlix and the various catch-up TV services are improving, but they've still got a long way to go to match what you can get in the US. Anybody who's tried knows it's not actually that hard to bypass the great content wall of America. With a little know-how, a little research, perhaps a few dollars, you can tap into a wide range of supposedly US-only services. Even the requirement for a US credit card isn't an insurmountable challenge. Perhaps the hardest thing about breaching the great content wall of America is the initial setup. Finding the solution that looks good, works reliably, and is relatively easy to engage when you need it. You'll need to do your research and investigate your options, which will vary depending on what you want to watch and how you want to watch it and how much you want to spend on a privilege. The speed and reliability of your connection to the US can be an important factor when it comes to picture quality. The next challenge, of course, is keeping up with that cat and mouse game between the content providers and those who offer the tools to bypass geo-blocking restrictions. Unfortunately, these kind of geo-dodging solutions are not set and forget because the content providers keep blocking services and closing loopholes. There's always a workaround, but it's a hassle for non-technical people who are looking for a solution which just works. These kind of geo-blocking bypassing options are really designed for people who like to tinker with computers. This complexity is perhaps the most efficient deterrent that content providers can put in place. They don't actually need to win the geo-blocking war, they just need to make the process difficult enough that your average person won't bother. The new generation of DNS-based geo-blocking workarounds are making the process a little easier, but they're still not foolproof and many people will still put geo-dodging in the too hard basket. I've spent a little time recently playing around with Netflix and Unblock Us, which is a DNS-based service that makes your device look like it's inside the US. What I found is that your mileage may vary and that the video quality could be disappointing unless you tweak some settings. Accessing a Netflix from Australia isn't that hard, although it can be a little fiddly and time-consuming to get it up and running. One of the hassles has been the need for a US credit card. Now, Unblock Us does offer some options for working around that, but recent changes with Netflix mean that it does actually accept some Australian credit cards. You might find that when you use your Australian credit card to pay for Netflix, you get a text message from your bank in the middle of the night that says, "Hey, call us, someone's trying to use your credit card where they're not supposed to, but if you give the bank a quick call and say, 'Yeah, no, it's okay, it's me,' they'll sort it out." Or so I've been told. But it's then disappointing to go to all that trouble, theoretically, only to discover that the picture quality isn't really worth the effort. Tested with a desktop browser on the Apple TV and on the PlayStation 3, the combination of Netflix and Unblock Us can be very disappointing at first. It's particularly frustrating when you've seen the picture quality that these devices can offer when hooked up to local services. Feedback from other users suggests that results with combining Netflix and Unblock Us can be hit and miss. Some say the picture quality is excellent, others say it's temperamental. That's pretty disappointing considering that you're actually paying for the privilege while there are other free options out there for stealing content that would really give you better results. In theory, a DNS-based geo-dodging service such as Unblock Us shouldn't be the cause of a poor picture quality because you don't face the kind of bandwidth restrictions that you encounter with a virtual private network. You're not actually creating an encrypted tunnel to the US, you're just masking your location. But even switching to a fast and reliable VPN-based service such as Wetopia doesn't see an improvement in the picture quality from Netflix. What does improve the picture quality is dipping into the Netflix video settings via the website. Netflix introduced the option to manage video quality last year, designed to assist users with slow data speeds and low monthly usage limits. Three options are available: good, better, and best. Netflix doesn't bring this to your attention. Instead, it just chooses one for you. Now, when you know about this and you go into that video menu for the first time, none of them are selected, but it's pretty clear that Netflix doesn't automatically default to best. Even if your download speeds are fast enough to get decent SD or even HD performance via Apple's movie rental service in Australia, you might find that Netflix has nobbled the video quality for you. Dipping into the settings and forcing Netflix to run at best can dramatically improve the picture quality. Although, even then, the playback isn't always completely smooth. To be honest, even at the best settings, Netflix doesn't look quite as good as what you'll get from an Apple TV. The combination of Netflix and Unblock Us might be the holy grail of online entertainment for some people, but as with most things on the internet, your mileage may vary.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adam's very lucky to have so many people that help him do his research, don't you think?
Yes.
Because he's told a lot of things. Wonder who it was who was woken up at 4 in the morning with the bank debiting a Netflix account.
I don't know.
Well, it never happened.
For those of you who wish to know, the BBC is unblocked using that service he mentioned. Oh, I didn't say that.
That slipped out.
It did, didn't it?
Oh, goodness.
I shouldn't go there.
And Unblock Us is unblock hyphen S.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Dot US.
Isn't it? Unblock hyphen
US.
I thought it was...
Oh, I said S, sorry, yeah. Unblock-us.com.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. I thought it was unblock.us.
And you can try it free. Just bug in your email address in there, change your DNS, and just have a look. You'll
sorry,
be surprised. Sorry,
I have to learn how to speak. Yeah.
All right. Just briefly, because Lena has lots to talk about, I just want to get one thing in before we do that. Apple.
Yay!
Have turned on the ability, which they had in the United States, here in Australia, to actually buy low-price ticket items in the Apple shop using your, or you pay with it through your iTunes account. So if you've got a credit card or something associated with your iTunes account, just bung it on my account, please. And they do it. Oh. That's cute, isn't it?
Yeah. How do they know who you are? And how do you have to sign into your account on something? Or
I take it that that would be something you would have to do somehow.
I'd love to know how that works.
Yeah, well, I'll have to pop up to Doncaster or... I don't go to Chadston. I haven't been to Chadston. I won't go there on principle. Those are the two spots where we are here in Melbourne.
It's got its own postcode.
It has. Yeah. It's probably got its own everything. Health services, police station, fire brigade, all that, all in the one spot. It's massive.
Government.
One shopping centre is a... Yes, well, that too. It's called centre management. You wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of that. But anyway, yes, where were we? Ah, that's right. It's Lena's turn.
Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Money, 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 money. That's a theme.
That's a
going
different
through.
Song.
That's a theme going through tonight's
segment. Do I have to find
segment.
That one now? That's no. an Amber song, isn't it?
It is.
Money,
it is.
Money, money.
Someone has sold their game collection for $1.2 million.
No.
Yep. A French collector's eBay auction has sold for more than $1.2
million. $1.2
million. $1 million.
That's nothing. Someone sold their movie poster collection the other day and it went for over two.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. The compilation from user collectors underscore king, which spanned the Famicom and Sega Master System to the Sega Dreamcast and Nintendo GameCube, sold for $1.23 million. The listing stated that each console had a full set of every game sold for it, as well as the system itself, and the manifest covered more than 7,000 total items. That is
that's
one
a lot.
Impressive collection.
What was the shipping like on that?
Each, must pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah, be pick up only. Yeah.
Each individual item in the collection, which ranged from the well-known, such as Super Mario Brothers for the Famicom, or the harder to find, such as the Virtual Boys Virtual Bowling, cost an average of $170 as of the final bid.
Dip into your Wayback Machine. What's the oldest game you have in your collection on that big white wall of yours in your study? How far back do you go?
The oldest game. Probably.
Come back to us on next week for that, because I'd be interested to know.
I actually want to have a look, because it could be a tie between some Sega Master System titles or maybe something for the PC even.
Really?
So I want to check, and then I'll tell you next week. Yeah. I'll write that down. Speaking of money, because it's all about money, the Steam Summer Sale is on right now. Now, that sounds weird for us because it's winter in the Southern Hemisphere, but Steam is based in the Northern Hemisphere, so there's summer for them. They have a large Christmas sale and a large summer sale, so we have a sale.
So what are you buying? What's on special that's got your eye?
There's some amazing deals on at the moment. There's two tabs that really help you in the store. Top sellers under $5 and top sellers under $10. You can get some amazing, not just the kind of $5 games you'd find at EB in the, you know, in the bargain bin, games that you've never heard of. These are proper AAA titles.
Real titles.
That you will find for super, super cheap. For example, Fallout New Vegas is 75% off, making it $12.50. The Walking Dead, which if you like the Walking Dead comics and the Walking Dead TV show, that's 40% off at $14.99. Bastion, 33% off for $10. That is a bargain for that game. Skyrim's 33% off. It's $59.99, normally $89.
We're doing ads now.
We are. I'm not really advertising, but they're amazing, amazing deals, especially
and
if
they're
you,
good games though, aren't they?
They are. Half-Life is 50% off. That's $5 for Half-Life 2. Just get Half-Life 2 if you don't have it already.
Well, Half-Life 50% off, did you say?
Half-Life 2 is 50% off at $5.99.
Pay full price, you get a full life.
Boom, boom.
Someone had to do it.
The amazing savings are in the mega packs. So you get these bundles. For example, the Sega Hit Collection is $424 worth of games for $49.99. US.
Wow. And this is all download, isn't it?
This is all digital.
Digital,
yep.
Download, yep.
That's 88% off. That has 72 games in it, including Alex Kidd in The Enchanted Castle, Echo the Dolphin, and Wonder Boy in Monster World, which we'll all remember from our childhood.
We should call it a winter sale because you need this for the kids in these terrible weather conditions that we're having in Australia at the moment, right across the board.
Exactly.
Keep them entertained for hours. 77 games.
Whoa. Yeah. The Star Wars collection is 50% off at $49.99 instead of $99.99. And I found one for Dr. Ron.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Rail Simulator Collection.
Yeah, nice.
Railworks 3 Collection includes 9 items at 79% off. That's $239 worth of games for $49.99.
Oh, I'm there now. So Steam, is it?
Yep, it's on Steam. The Rail Simulator Collection.
Steampowered.com. I'm trying to remember the,
yes,
the Ural. Is that right?
The Ural, yep. L.A. Noire was an Australian-made game that came out a year ago now.
Oh, what's that been discounted to?
That's now $7.50.
Oh.
So it's worth buying for just seeing the facial animations and the motion capture technology that was used. If you watch Mad Men, Ken Cosgrove, the guy who played Ken Cosgrove, plays Cole Phelps in L.A. Noire, and it actually looks like the actor himself is acting in it. So it's sort of the first game where I've really seen a person being the actual person in the game. Now, the other two things that you must have if you do not already, because you haven't listened to me in the past, which makes you very, very naughty indeed. Portal 1 is $5. Take it now.
$5?
I feel ripped off. I paid $30 for mine.
You can't buy a cup of coffee for that.
Exactly. And Portal 2 is $9.99.
Wow.
Get them now. You have no excuse.
Can you get Minecraft there? No.
No,
it's not a Steam game.
I am the least gamey person,
yep,
that has ever played a game. I just do not play. I do not enjoy computer games.
Aw.
And I loved Portal.
Aha! Yay! So you do love computer games then. You love computer game.
I love that one.
You love computer game.
So if you're not into computer games and you've never played a computer game before and you just don't like them,
mm-hmm,
go and get Portal.
Portal,
it's a brain teaser.
It's a brain teaser. There's no violence. So if you're worried about that, or if you're worried about children playing it, don't worry about it too much. Like everything, though, if you are worried about your children playing games, play it first, or look up walkthroughs on YouTube. But Portal is, I would have no qualms in.
There's a little bit of violence in Portal.
Not the kind of blood spattery kind of violence like the weird.
It's not a first-person shooter, though, is it?
No, you would put your companion cube. You know, stuff happens with your companion cube, but nothing really.
It's a
first person
shooter, but you're not shooting bullets, you're shooting portal guns.
When you get shot by those little turret things, there's blood on the wall behind you where you got shot.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But that's, yeah. No, you're right there. I don't hate you. Are you still there? That's the little turrets that are looking for you. They do shoot you, so be careful. But it's not anything too graphic. The cake is a lie, yeah. That's Portal 1. Now, it's going on with our money theme. This is something I think is going to really excite you guys because you are fans of something I'm about to talk about.
Oh.
This is the, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelled O-U-Y-A. And apparently it's pronounced Ouya, as in Booyah, but without the B. It's a console that's just gone onto Kickstarter. It's being dubbed the People's Console. Ooh.
You know
how we normally talk about the big three?
Yeah.
There may be a fourth.
Really?
The project asked for $950,000 for its goal, and it reached $1 million in 8 hours of the Kickstarter campaign starting. With 23 days to go, 38,166 backers have pledged $4,874,840. The Ouya is being dubbed the People's Console due to its low price point. Get this, it's $99. This is a brand new console and it costs $99.
Pretty cheap.
And it promises free games.
They've got my attention, but there's a saying.
Does it cost $99 or will it cost $99 if it ever turns into anything other than vaporware?
Well, it's already been funded. They've already reached their goal, so it's already technically been funded. They only wanted $950,000 and they've got almost $5 million. So I think it's going to happen. I think it's pretty safe to say that's enough to get them over the line. The thing that they're trying to do is to put smartphone games into the lounge room and onto your TV via Android. They want to put an Android operating system on this console and make it so you can play Android games on your telly.
It's an open source world. It's that kind of deal.
The deal is that hopefully with less cost for developers, because to actually develop for an Xbox, you have to get the licensing fees. You also have to get access to a debug console, which means you can play games that aren't actually finished yet on the Xbox to test them. They're really, really expensive and they cost a lot of money to access and to get, and there's a lot of fuss involved in what
where do you get
can
them
do
from?
With them
do you have
stuff.
To when you join
you
up
have to
be
get
a partner
them,
or something, do you?
Yeah, you have to get them from Microsoft themselves. So they're hoping that for less cost for developers, it will hopefully lead to more innovative games, and it's more of an open door. The only rule is that for the developers, some gameplay has to be free. Developers can offer a free demo with a full game upgrade if they want, or in-game items or powers, or ask you to subscribe. They've called it hacker-friendly.
Why?
And have said, have at it, say the developers of Ouya. It's easy to root, and rooting will not void your warranty. Everything opens with standard screws, and hardware hackers can create their own peripherals and connect via USB or Bluetooth.
Ooh.
And I've got some specs for you, just to get you excited.
I've just found them.
Oh, the Tegra 3 quad-core processor, 1 gig of RAM, 8 gig of internal flash storage, HDMI connection to the TV, support for up to 1080p HD.
Hello, Nintendo.
Don't gloss over that with the support for up to 1080p HD. Now, some mainstream consoles don't have that yet.
Yep. Only one.
Yes.
Hello, Nintendo.
Wi-Fi 802.11, B/G/N.
BG and N, but no A.
No.
Interestingly.
USB 2.0.
Yep.
Wireless controller.
Not 3.0.
That's a bit sad. Yeah.
Mm. Wireless controller with... Well, now that they've got almost 5 million instead of 950,000, they might upgrade
maybe
a few
the
of these.
Specs will be revised.
Yeah. A wireless controller with standard controls being 2 analog sticks, a D-pad, 8 action buttons and a system button, and a touchpad.
So this is a best of both worlds controller. This is very much like the PlayStation 3 controller that's completely wireless, Bluetooth connected. It doesn't say that the wireless controller is Bluetooth connected, but I'm sure it is, looking at the specs.
And the concept art they've got on the actual Kickstarter page looks very, very pretty in terms of that controller and the box itself. And it'll be running Android 4.0. Every console sold will include the software development kit for it as well.
So hackers can have a hack.
They can have at it.
Yep.
Check out the Kickstarter if you'd like to kick in a few bucks to help out. There's also some rewards for the pledges. So the more money you give, the more you get out of it, really. They give you a lot of nice little incentives along the way.
What's the website, Lens, if we want to have a look for some more information?
Kickstarter.com.
Easy.
And it'll probably be on the
just,
front
just
page.
Just Google O-U-Y-A. That's the easiest way.
Ouya. O-U-Y-A.
Ouya.
Are you guys excited about that?
I am.
Android fans?
If it becomes a reality, I'll be impressed.
Looking. I'm not a gamer.
No, but think Android on a lounge room, on a television. It's not just going to be gaming, is it?
No.
No.
And this device being completely open source with a processor like that, and an HDMI port and all those things, that this is not going to just be used for games. This is going to be used for a lot of things.
You could get some very funky little media centers coming out of this.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
This could be very exciting.
And what I probably should remind our dear listener is that...
We've got more than one.
hopefully.
We mentioned that this is an open source product, using open source software. Mm-hmm. Now, open source, we must... a lot of people just associate open source with being free. And what we need to stress is that in this case, open source means free in the sense of freedom, in the sense of free speech, which means you are free to look at the source code, you're free to make changes, you're free to edit the program to make it do something different, all that sort of stuff, write new programs for it, all that sort of stuff. You have freedom across all those things. Sometimes it also means free in the sense of free beer, in the sense of you don't have to pay for it.
Mm.
But in this case, there'll be some things you have to pay for and some things that you don't. So it's just worth remembering that open source is always free as in freedom, but not always free as in free beer, but quite often it is.
Mm.
And that's just going to be worth remembering with this device.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of hacks
it'll be more
out.
Than interesting. This is going to be an interesting toy.
Mm, especially considering it's open to hardware hacking as well.
When?
Not sure. They're still in the funding stage. So I think they did say a date. I'm just scrolling down the Kickstarter now. They said something about, or did I imagine that? I may have imagined it.
Andy's already going shopping on the on that site, on the Steam site. He's gone off looking for Cities in Motion Railway Railworks Bundles, apparently.
Dr. Railworks Bundle?
According to Wikipedia, nice. So grain of salt required, the console is slated for release in March 2013.
That's not very long
not
away.
Far away.
No.
That's coming so into our winter, which is right. Good, because it means everyone can sit at home and play with it rather than have to go out and play on the beach.
And be in the sun. Ew.
I'm looking forward to sun again.
Now, it's interesting to just compare this with another product that we've talked about in the last several weeks, which is the... Oh, now the name of it's gone out of my mind. The little $25 computer.
The Raspberry Pi.
Oh, the Raspberry Pi. That's the one.
My husband got one of those.
Really?
He's like actually got one. He's got it in his
hand. In the house. Yeah.
Oh, like fantastic.
Has he done anything with it?
Not yet. Do you want me to bring it in next week?
Yeah, sure. Yes, and please. We'll take some photos and put up on the web.
Yeah.
I've ordered one from each of the two suppliers, but I haven't got them yet.
Oh.
So, I'll be... I'm anxiously awaiting mine. But what's interesting is that this has a lot in common with the Raspberry Pi. It's that similar sort of processor. It's got some memory. It's got some flash storage. It's got an HDMI connection. And it's got a couple of things that the Raspberry Pi doesn't have.
Mm.
But...
probably a tad larger.
Yeah, and a tad more expensive. But it's a finished product. It comes with a box and a power supply and all those sorts of things, which the Raspberry Pi doesn't. It's a bare circuit board.
Yep.
So this might be something that's going to fill a similar niche. And it may well be that some projects might exist for both platforms.
The Ouya could be a gateway to the Raspberry Pi.
Or vice versa, yeah.
The thing about open source is it's going to encourage people to get out there and get their hands dirty and do stuff with it.
I hope so.
We don't see much of that these
days. I hope that the prevalence of the Raspberry Pi and... Hopefully, if this thing takes off, if it becomes a popular device, then it'll mean there'll be lots of little, relatively inexpensive computers with a little bit of computing power that people can tinker and program. And I hope that kids coming up through schools learn more than how to make their projects look pretty in Microsoft Word.
Or Minecraft, for that matter.
Yeah. I hope that they start to come through the education system learning a little bit about programming and learning a little bit about how to write scripts and how to write basic stuff like that. But if you know, and those that are interested will pick up a bit of C or something like that would be absolutely wonderful to see, and it would make us a better society in general.
Could be a good shot in the arm for Android game development too.
Could be.
Could definitely be, yes.
Anything else, Lance? Because we're rapidly running out of time.
No, that was what I was going to say to round that up, because, more Android games, hopefully, that means.
Yeah. Yeah,
if it means
so.
You can play it in your lounge room, maybe they'll have more people taking it up.
Graham was saying too, just to get the young people interested in programming, because when we grew up with early computers, we used to do that sort of stuff. Dr. On brought in the 5 1/4 inch floppies the other day to prove it. Says he, "What are you doing over there, by the way, Dr. On? You're awfully quiet at the moment. Are you buying online on Steam or something, are you?"
He's probably writing a list
is that
of all the
doing?
Things on the Steam sale.
No?
No, I'm sitting here quietly. I'm listening intently.
All right, we're going to go to the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week very shortly.
Is it that time already?
It is that time already.
We've only been on for about 10 minutes.
I know, it seems like that. Just I want to touch briefly on this. The ACCC considers a naked mandate for Telstra.
Excuse me?
The ACCC, that's the watchdog, they're going to try and encourage Telstra to offer a naked service. You know how a lot of telcos at the moment, you can have internet only up your phone without having a phone service?
Naked ADSL.
Yeah.
So this is an ADSL service without a telephone service.
Yeah, Telstra could be forced to wholesale naked DSL services over its copper infrastructure for the first time under a new proposal from the competition watchdog. So watch this space for that one. So, because Telstra just don't like bundling. It's not in their interest to do anything naked because they like having a phone service.
No, the money is in the dial tone for them.
Cash cow, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, the money in the dial tone, too, right.
Well, it is, and sadly for Telstra, that's just rapidly disappearing.
And sadly for Telstra, they still think that way.
Exactly.
I'm only going to buy a TV station very shortly. You watch. Team up with the AFL. let's not perish the thought. Anyway, so...
They are teamed up with the AFL.
They are, correct.
They have contracts with the AFL.
Oh, here's something else which I thought was probably worth a mention too.
I still say it would be much better if the AFL bought Channel 9 than if Telstra bought it. Please, Mr. Dimitri, listen up. If you ever have listened to us now. Set up your own media company.
Do you remember the big internet kill switch that the US government used to have? Used to, I say.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. Anyway,
I believe that for a second.
How's this for conspiracy theory? The US President Barack Obama has signed an executive order giving the government agencies unprecedented powers to control communications networks during emergencies. And this is according to a lobby group. It's not according to anyone official, but a lobby group. The order titled Assignment for National Security and Emergency Preparedness Communications Functions gives the US Department of Homeland Security authority to seize private communications facilities and effectively control the internet. Means they can go and knock on Google, Microsoft, Apple's door, I guess, and say, hi, we just need to borrow your stuff. So, anyway, this is...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the root DNS servers aren't all in America.
No, correct.
No.
So they can only do with what they want. Congress dropped the proposal for the internet kill switch after public protests.
Yes. In general, the internet, such as it is, because it's not a single thing and it's not a single entity... would simply exist around such interference.
Certainly would. Anyway, food for thought, what the US government's trying to do as
There'd
well.
There'd be a lot of unhappy Americans, a lot of unhappy people trying to access services in America.
Yes,
but
correct.
We would work around it.
They just use Unblock Us. Pop it on the US government's wish list. Anyway, OddSpot Gadget App and Website of the Week coming up after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
This week's gadget, Andrew, the Motorola Zoom 2 Media Edition tablet. It's a tablet running Android 3.2, which is Honeycomb, with a zippy 1.2 gigahertz dual-core processor.
What's a Media Edition?
The Media Edition lets you stream files from your PC with a piece of software, a free application from Motorola called Motocast.
Handy.
With Motocast, you can access your home computer remotely and stream your music and your films, your pics and your documents.
Does it play all types
straight
of media?
To your tablet. Yeah, it's got, on the Motorola website, it lists the types of media that it plays.
Okay, so it's got a good range?
It has a good range.
Oh, good.
Front and rear-facing cameras, all the usual Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity you come to expect. GPS equipped. I haven't come across a tablet that's GPS equipped before.
No. Does that mean you can use it for navigation in the car?
You can use it for anything. Anything where a GPS receiver would be useful.
Does it come with a car mount?
It does. I don't know. I don't know. It might be a good opportunity for
Qantas
some budding
iPads
entrepreneur.
In there. They're going to use it for navigation.
They are.
Just kidding.
No, they are. We had the application for pilots on a
they
few
did.
Weeks ago.
Yes.
Which was endorsed by Air Services Australia.
You know the big bag they carry with all the NOTAMs and all that sort of stuff in them? Yeah, well, Qantas are going to reply. Two in each aircraft.
Apparently. Get all that electronic. Yeah. Look, it's also got USB support. It's even DLNA compatible. Digital Living Network Alliance. Shop around, though. I found them anywhere from $400 to about $650 online. So prices vary widely. That's a gadget. The Motorola Zoom 2 Media Edition.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Thank you, Matt, for this week's suggestion. www.bigfiveglories.com.
Oh, dear. What's that about?
Hi there, says Matt. Hope that everyone is getting over their colds. Thanks, Matt.
Slowly.
Watch free classic movies online. Bigfiveglories.com. These are black and white classics from the 30s and 40s and 50s. Including some Hitchcock greats. So one is where the rights are no longer an issue. They can put these up online. There's a search engine.
Ah, like the Gutenberg thing.
All that sort of stuff. Mm. There's categories like a silent film category, a colour film category.
So there's
category.
More than five there. There's lots of films.
There's lots.
Right?
You can browse by genre as well. Great for movie buffs. If you're a movie buff, have a look.
What about the old black and white, you know, the ones before sound? Like
they're all there. There's a silent movie category.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So you can sit there and play the piano whilst it's
for the
playing
cinephiles.
On the
screen. If that's what gets you going.
What a great idea.
Absolutely. That's our website, Andrew. Cool. Thanks, Matt, for the suggestion. www.bigfiveglories.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Speaking of sports and the Olympics and things, have you been watching the tour on SBS?
Yeah, yeah. They've been throwing things like little nasty tacks in front of people now. So they've been sabotaging people.
Good.
No.
Thanks, Oz Governor, for this week's suggestion. The Skoda Tour Tracker 2012. Follow the 2012 Tour de France with the Skoda Tour Tracker, which is the official application. It gives you been, in-depth access and analysis.
Have you been up late?
I have been up late. It. I have been up late.
On SBS?
It's very interesting. It's fascinating. From live video to GPS tracking, you can be part of the race action no matter where you are.
The weird communities that grow up around the Tour de France are more interesting than the action itself in many cases.
And people have tour parties. There's a tour hashtag. You get hash.
Oh, Twitter would go off, wouldn't it, with the Tour de France? Yeah.
Hash SBS TDF. And all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. Troll DJ.
Troll DJ.
Yeah, yep, definitely. The application gives you live video stream coverage of every stage, up to the minute text updates.
Wow.
GPS tracking, professional photography from every day, video recaps of each stage, so on and so forth. Designed for iPhone and iPad and Android.
So it covers everybody.
Covers everybody.
That's got to be good.
That's our app, Andrew, the Skoda Tour Tracker.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bob. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A man whose prized sports car was stolen 42 years ago.
Oh, is this one that turned up on eBay?
Recovered the vehicle after spotting it on eBay.
How's this?
Mr. Robert Russell, 66, a retired sales manager, told the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department he'd never given up searching for the 1967 Austin Healey after it was stolen from his Philadelphia home in 1970. That's even before.
Austin Healey.
I bet it had a name. I bet any money it had a name.
They're beautiful cars, though. I
bet it had a name.
I had a friend who had a yellow one in his garage.
Proper car.
Mr. Russell spotted what he thought was his car listed on eBay by the Beverly Hills Car Club. He checked the VIN number on the website with the one in the car's title certificate and found they were a match. Mr. Russell contacted the police department. Detectives tracked down the car in East Los Angeles. The car club owner denied knowing the vehicle was stolen and said its previous owner, in inverted commas...
It had probably been bought and sold a dozen times.
Yeah, exactly. Point, yeah.
Had the car in his possession for 42 years.
Ooh.
Oh, guilty, Your Honour.
Yeah.
And had been driving the car on a regular basis. That's our odd spot, Andrew. eBay to the rescue.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm going to Google it, see if it had a name.
I've heard of people doing that. Especially if you've had stuff which is very near and dear and unique nicked from you, people tend to have a look on eBay, see if it turns up. And it does from time to time.
You never know. You never know where it's going to turn up.
So what happened to the... Does it say? What happened to the...
they recovered the car.
Yeah, but what about the people who...
Police are still investigating.
Still investigating. Yeah. So we haven't got a conclusion.
No, not just yet. But I thought that was a good result, though.
Yeah.
Did the car have a name, Lena?
I'm looking. Oh, no, his wife is Cynthia.
Maybe that was close. It might have been called Cynthia.
It might have been. No, he had the car before he had her.
Aww. Maybe. No, so let's not explore that.
He didn't really love the car if he didn't name it. Just want to say that. Put that out there.
Could email him.
You name your cars, don't you?
I do.
Which one's yours at the moment?
Mabel.
Mabel.
Is in the car park tonight.
The little blue one?
Mabel the Mazda.
The blue one? Yeah, Mabel.
And the other one is Ivy because she's green.
See, we all do things like that.
Mm.
I've never named a car, though. They haven't got to that yet.
It's a rule in our family that have to be named after little old ladies.
Oh, names. Really?
Yeah.
Well, we'll discuss that in the car park edition afterwards. How appropriate. That's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Hope you've enjoyed today's shows, everyone. Until the same time next week when we get closer to the Olympics, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.